Welcome to a new episode of the Film at Lincoln Center podcast. This week, we're excited to present a conversation with the Animal Kingdom director, Thomas Cayley, and the Pod Generation director, Sophie Bartz, as they discuss their playful, up-to-the-minute experiments with genre and the use of speculative fiction to examine political realities and probe timeless emotional truth. Thomas Cayley, whose 2014 breakout feature, Love at First Fight, charmed audiences with its invigorating fusion of the rom-com and coming-of-age genres, returned to rendezvous with French cinema with this year's opening night selection, The Animal Kingdom, in which a darkly imaginative sci-fi premise gives way to a thoughtful study of fatherhood. When mankind is plagued with a mysterious infection that selectively mutates the bodies of ordinary people into animal hybrids, a widower and his teenage son must fight to survive in Cayley's darkly imaginative exploration of a human ecosystem undergoing inexplicable but potentially liberating transformation. The Animal Kingdom is now in select theaters, courtesy of Magnolia Pictures. Now please enjoy the conversation between Thomas Cayley and Sophie Bartz, moderated by FLC assistant programmer Madeline Whittle, with interpretation by Nicholas Elliott.
Thank you so much to both of you for joining us this afternoon. One of my favorite formats of conversation to moderate in this context is a conversation between two filmmakers, because I think both of your bodies of work deal with themes and sort of formal and philosophical questions that I think are already in conversation, and having you both here in person gives us a chance to bring that conversation to life, I think. So just to get started, since The Animal Kingdom has not premiered yet here in New York, hopefully some in the audience will get a chance to see the film tonight. Some may have already seen it as it premiered at Un Certain Regard at last year's Cannes Film Festival. But just for anyone in the audience who has not seen The Animal Kingdom, in your own words, could you speak a bit about the premise and specifically how you approached this story as a work of sci-fi or speculative fiction?
Bonjour. Pour moi, on suit, c'est l'histoire d'un père et d'un fils dans un monde en mutation, je dirais. Et la mutation, elle s'exprime physiquement, puisque certains humains se mettent mystérieusement à se transformer en animaux.
For me, it's the story of a father and son in a mutating world, which is physically expressed because some human beings are being transformed into animals. Strangely, I didn't think of this story as pure science fiction when I started writing it. What was fun and interesting for me in the writing was to think of it as an intersection between several genres, which would allow me to film contemporary society, contemporary France. To really, what was important to me was to film this country, this society, and it's going through this small change that allows one to see into the intimacy of a character, of a family, and more politically, of an entire society.
In a way, you anticipated my next question, which I wanted to dig into this question of genre. Specifically, I presented the film as a work of sci-fi, but I think, as you point out, it's also a family drama. It's also a coming-of-age or young adult story of a young man figuring out who he is and who he wants to be in relation to his family and in relation to the wider world. And I'm curious, at the level of writing the film and conceiving it, before you get to the question of special effects or production design, What are some of the challenges inherent in trying to attend to these different genre pressures and demands? And it's something that I think you do quite successfully of bringing together a truly affecting dramatic storyline that is also quite successful as a spectacular work of speculative fiction, imagining a scenario that is unlike the world that we live in now, but also like it.
Merci pour cette question. En fait, au moment de l'écriture, ce qui est primordial, quoi, ce qui est vraiment plus important que tout le reste, c'est les personnages. Les personnages, leur caractérisation, leur trajet. C'est ça qui m'intéresse.
When I write in general, what is most important is the characters, their trajectory, the characterization, and what obsessed me, that's what obsesses me during writing. What I was terrified of when I was writing this film was that the fantasy or sci-fi element would crush all the rest. That because there was this genre element, because I had introduced critters into the story, then the characters would have to scream and panic. There would be a crescendo of action. And I think because I chose to place the story in the contemporary moment, so that the sci-fi element seems nearly to just happen in a discreet way, that allowed me to have both the comedy and the drama, the realism and the fantasy. And that's why the film is told at the level of the characters. The whole way through, we really didn't relent in ensuring that we were always telling the story at the level of the characters. The film must work because we care about these characters.
I am so eager to talk about this film in relation to Sophie's recent film, The Pod Generation, which similarly envisions a family unit, very finely drawn, very specific, real-seeming characters who exist in a world in which, in the case of the Pod Generation, technology has advanced to a point where, as an example, as the sort of central example of the film, reproductive technology gives women the opportunity to gestate a fetus outside of their own body, and the implications that this has in the lives of a couple play out over the course of the film. And so where Thomas' film is grappling with this sort of natural catastrophe or mystery, Sophie, the Pod Generation, is very specifically it's sort of interested in the nexus between nature and technology. And I wonder if you could, sort of along the same lines as the question that I asked Thomas, if you could speak about whether you conceive of a screenplay like this as sci-fi first and foremost, or as a relationship drama or a family drama upon which you build these questions about sort of the philosophical implications of technology.
Well, it's always complicated, I think, when you write, is the chicken and the egg, right? Is it the concept coming first or the characters coming first? I think it's as you write, you see, you're trying to build. You don't want to be, as Thomas said, crushed by the concept, and then you're just making a conceptual movie that no one is going to relate with. And what I really loved about your film is how the banality of this transformation is so interesting, and it made me think a little bit of Spielberg E.T., where you have this creature in the closet and it's there and those kids are alive. So I think it was very interesting to see. There are very few sci-fi movies, and I think that's why Thomas' movie is not a science fiction movie. It's more than that, because it has a very deep connection to what it is to be a father, what it is to see a teenager transform. I have a teenager, and I feel she's also a creature. Like in the film, we can relate as parents. And this, what I think is interesting today is that you can make science fiction movies that have a philosophical thing to say about our relationship to other human beings, to nature. And I thought it was really interesting also in, I want to talk more about his film because it's, you know, the subject matter more than my film today. But I thought, because we're both French, and in France we've been a little bit crushed by Descartes, I think, who said that a man was maître possesseur de la nature, was the master and the owner of nature. And I think our generation, maybe we're looking at this thinking, well, maybe now it's the time for nature to tell us that actually nature is controlling us more than we're controlling nature. You know, it's a sort of, not a revenge of nature, but it's like a sort of humility lesson, because we've been believing that we can, it's at our disposition, we could do whatever we want with it. And that's what I thought was very deep about your film, that we feel there is a sort of, you know, strength of nature and intelligence of nature that we don't fully understand. And this metaphor, I don't know if it was your intention, but I saw a lot of Spinoza in it, the philosopher of nature, who said, you know, the more you think you control nature, the more nature reminds you it actually controls you. And maybe that's a thought of the time we live in. But I love those kind of movies where there's layers after layers, you go deeper into what it is to be human. What's the human experience, really?
I'm curious, Thomas, if you have thoughts about the philosophical argument that the animal kingdom makes, if you see it as an argument or more of an experiment of putting characters into a scenario and watching how things play out, or sort of allowing things to play out, or do you see it as more of a process of making an argument?
Je crois que c'est évidemment les deux, et c'est cyclique, quoi. C'est l'un qui pousse l'autre, qui nourrit l'autre. Sur un plan philosophique, ce que vient de dire Sophie était très important pour moi, le fait qu'on passe d'un état où on pense que la nature nous appartient à un projet qui serait de reconsidérer qu'on appartient à un monde plus grand. Donc ça, c'était quelque chose qui était très, très ancré dans le projet dès le début de l'écriture. Je pense à Descola, à Philippe Descola, qui a beaucoup écrit là-dessus, sur le fait qu'on est probablement, au fond, la seule espèce de l'histoire.
Well, obviously, it's both. It's cyclical. One thing pushes or feeds the other. And from a philosophical point of view, what Sophie just said is very important to me. It's that we're moving from this state of thinking that nature belongs to us to entering a world that is bigger than us. And that's something that really anchored the writing of this from the very beginning. I thought a lot about the writer Philippe Descola, who has noted that we are probably the only species in the history of the world that has drawn a border between us and all the rest. And so the whole project of this film was to mess with that border, to stomp on it, to make it not so clear, to see what happens when our fellow person, our fellow human, is no longer exactly our fellow human, to have a less binary situation, a less clear one. So that's the theory that accompanied the writing. And from there, of course, the challenge is how to put it into a form, to have the characters have a real trajectory. As you pointed out, it is a tale of apprenticeship, of learning about the world. And so how do we take these characters further into the mystery of what is not human, to find this kind of black box and what it means to enter the animal kingdom. And what's very important to me is for the perspective of the viewer to change from the first minute to, say, the 90th minute of the film. So for the viewer to initially perhaps think of something as a monstrosity and later in the film to consider it with understanding, empathy, and perhaps even love.
I think this is another area where the sort of fusion of genres can be a powerful tool, because on the one hand, there are these grand sort of philosophical questions that form a framework for, or that are the framework for the story, the premise of the story. But at the same time, there is a level of intimacy that the film achieves by navigating the relationship between, in this case, a father and his teen son, which, you know, animal mutation, pandemic or not, it's going to be a fraught relationship. And you can see some of the contradictions and tensions in the philosophical scenario that play out through the characters and through the conflict and tensions between Emile, played by Paul Kircher, who's the teen boy, and his father, played by Romain Duris, who's... They both have somewhat different outlooks on this scenario as it's unfolding. And I guess I just want to turn the conversation to the development of those characters and those relationships and how you tease out those interpersonal conflicts while also playing out the sort of grander philosophical trajectory.
Ce qui m'intéressait au fond, c'était de
What ultimately interests me here is the question around, or what ultimately interests me here is to question this vast notion of transmission, of passing something on. What is it, and what happens when we pass something down, when we transmit knowledge? We have two generations in the film, the father and the son, and the obvious thing is to assume that the father is going to pass things on to the son. But the reality is more complex, because in fact, the son is going to teach his father a great deal. And I have the conviction that ultimately, what this film tells us, or what it, the point that it reaches, is it shows us how kids make parents, how the kids make their parents. François, I believe, is more of a father at the end of the film than he is at the beginning of the film, because what his son is going through makes him bring together what he says and what he does. Whereas before, there's more of a gap between these things. He is a man who has deep convictions, but there's this gap between his actions and his words. For instance, he tells his son how great it is to disobey, that this is very important, but he can't seem to actually be able to do that. It's his son who makes him do that. And so in a sense, the father and son trajectories kind of they trade places in that Emile brings his father the energy that allows him to deconstruct his version of his vision of the world.
Speaking of visions of the world, that also is a nice segue into a question I wanted to ask you both, which is about the way you go about visualizing the world in which these speculative scenarios can play out. You've both worked in other genres. Thomas, your first feature, Love at First Fight, was, I've seen, described as an anti-rom-com, but certainly in conversation with the romantic comedy genre. Sophie, your previous feature before The Pie Generation was Madame Bovary, which is, of course, a historical period literary adaptation. But for each of your most recent works, you're working in a register where, as we talked about before, this is a world that is meant to be recognizably our world, but it's undergoing a kind of transformation. And I wonder if you could each just speak about how you approach that challenge of telling a story set in a world that's meant to feel like ours, but that's also sort of profoundly transformed, in whether it's the question of how to show humans turning into animals at varying stages of this medical condition, or in the case of a film like The Pod Generation, a world in which technology has become even more of sort of an ambient dominating presence than it is in our world currently. And how did you get at some of these questions visually and construct these cohesive visual worlds? It's a big question, forgive me.
No, I think for me it's more efficient that science fiction is very relatable because I feel we live in science fiction, at least since I moved to the US 20 years ago, and I've always felt I'm in a science fiction movie every day that I wake up here. And I think it's part of the technology and it's just part of our daily life. So it's more efficient, I feel, to make sci-fi that is relatable to our experience, our daily experience, than to have... And I love Blade Runner, but like Blade Runner thing, you would need, like, first the budgets are so high to really achieve it the way, you know, it's been done beautifully. But if you want to play with a concept and still have a story to tell that we can relate to, I think it's better that it could happen today. And that's how I feel about technology. I think it's already there. I think this pod is an allegory of our relationship to technology, which is completely unhinged. And it's already there in a way. It could be an egg, but it could be any other type of way that we relate to technology. And can I ask a question to Thomas after?
Je pense à l'œuf qui est dans ton film, Sophie. La première fois où on le voit, moi, j'ai l'impression que cette forme, on la connaît évidemment parce qu'on sait ce que c'est qu'un œuf, aussi parce qu'il y a une espèce de look un peu Apple, qui fait qu'on... C'est un objet qui semble très familier, et on se dit qu'on va très vite faire le tour de cette question-là, parce qu'il y a cette surface toute lisse. Et en fait, plus on rentre dans l'histoire, plus ça devient complexe, parce que d'un coup, tu lui donnes des attributs...
This makes me think of the egg in your film, Sophie. The first time we see it, that shape is familiar to us. Of course, we all know eggs, and it kind of has an apple look. It seems familiar, but we think we're quickly going to have mastered the whole question, known everything there is to know about it, also because it's very smooth. But the more we enter into the story, the more complex it gets. We realize it's transparent. There are sounds, characters hold it. For instance, when the protagonist, Alfie, puts it in a harness, suddenly we see a pregnant man before us, and that works. So the object becomes an extension of the concept. And that, for me, is the beauty of a good science fiction concept, is that you never get to the bottom of it. You never fully comprehend it. It's always evolving. Regarding the mutation that's at the center of the story in my film, and to answer your question, what I tried to do formally was to think of mutation as a phenomenon, a movement from the interior to the exterior, which is to say that it starts in a cell where it's invisible, and as it transforms, it affects the body and becomes visible. And that, by turn, begins to change social interactions, because how people look at each other changes, and ultimately that builds to change the entire world. And what I thought was interesting about that is that that's actually the history of life. We wouldn't be sitting here talking to each other if it weren't for mutations. We would be little cells lost in the ocean. And it took millions of years for us to evolve to this stage. So what the whole story of the film, what we're trying to do, is to constantly be moving from the interior to the exterior, to see how lives are being transformed by this, and to see, for instance, in the relationship with Emile and his father, how the father is brought to have to defend the society or the idea of the world that he wants to leave his children.
Can I ask a question? I'm very curious because one of the only movie really about transformation into an animal that I had seen in the last years was The Lobster, the Yorgos Lanthimos movie. And I felt his approach was so antithetical to yours, because the punishment was to become an animal, which position us with a superiority complex. Like, you're a human, and if you don't fall in love, then the punishment is you could choose your animal, but you're going to become a lobster, and that's the most dreadful thing that can happen. And I thought, if it was a conscious, I mean, I imagine, yes, because you must have philosophically thought a lot about your film, that actually it's not really a punishment. Like the fact that you transform or you mutate into an animal or go back to the source of where we come from is maybe not positioned in terms of either a reward or punishment, but it's something else. And we don't know what that something else is. And there is a beautiful connection to nature. We don't see the nature as a very inviting place, like we see those creatures are struggling a little bit to adjust. But I was wondering, like, what was you, did you, I'm sure you've seen The Lobster, and how did you feel philosophically that how your film was responding to that film?
Non, j'avais beaucoup aimé The Lobster. Pour moi, c'est vraiment un film qui parle de l'amour. Bon, c'est beaucoup plus que sur la relation entre l'humain et la nature. C'est surtout sur la question de comment l'amour survit en société et l'amour survit à l'injonction du couple. Je crois que c'est un très beau film là-dessus. En tout cas, par rapport à la question de, j'ai essayé de pas juger moralement cette mutation.
I like The Lobster a lot. For me, it's a film about love more than the relationship between human and nature. How love survives in society and the obligation of being in a couple. In the case of my film, I tried not to have a moral judgment of the mutation because this cellular transformation has no moral aspect. It's simply the history of life. So there's no judgment, but society can't help itself from decreeing what is the norm and what is abnormal. So it was important in my story that the mutation not be a punishment, just as it's not a utopia. It's perhaps a way of the film is a way of championing other ways of being alive. My film is perhaps more utopian than dystopian in that it suggests or tries to suggest that there are other ways of living together. That's a utopia, living together with our differences. And of course, this is related to the environmental crisis that we've been going through, or that we are going through. Since we were growing up, we've been in a world that seems to be getting poorer and poorer. And I didn't want to make yet another film that would be playing on that, set in a desert where nothing is growing, apocalyptic, and so on. Instead, I thought that we could offer something different where the anomaly offers something more.
Well, I'm sorry to say that we are just about out of time because we're going to whisk Thomas away to the red carpet ahead of his film's premiere. But I hope that you will all check out The Animal Kingdom, whether at tonight's premieres or thanks to the film's distributor, Magnolia Pictures. It will be getting a more extensive release in the coming months, so keep an eye out if you're not able to join us this evening. But please do join me in thanking our guests, Sophie Barton-Thomas-Cayet, and thank you all.